This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi there. I'm K-Town. And on this edition of Mysterious Radio. Are night terrors common in young children, first of all?
Well, nightmares are. And there is a distinction between night terrors and nightmares. And I do make
it in my book. Okay, well, tell me the difference. There you go. Okay. All right, go ahead.
I'll tell you the difference. Yeah. So first, we're starting at around between, say, ages 3 and 6. The majority of children start having nightmares. And it tends to persist up until about the beginning of middle school. And the usual reason for it, or reasons, is that a child is adapting to things in this world that are too complex for them to wrap their minds around. It's new to them. There are things that they naturally react to fearfully because they don't understand it. Fear translates into, you know, dreams, as usually as nightmares, especially at that age. And then as we get older, we get a better sense of ourselves, we learn how to adapt to the world, and that's generally when the nightmares start to subside. Then again, you get to that age, middle school, high school, and you can start experiencing other sorts of stresses and things that can then turn into adult nightmares. Now, a night terror is a little bit of a different experience because it's more of an energetic experience of the body. Dreaming itself is a process of the mind and body together, the entire nervous system. People think that dreams only happen in the brain, but that's not true. It's an experience of the entire nervous system. But what I found with night terrors through talking with people who have PTSD is that what they are experiencing, for one, can't be interpreted generally the same way as you do nightmares. When I sit down and talk with someone about a nightmare, I can go through the processes of dream interpretation and apply certain methods to decoding the symbolism and analyzing the story, using techniques like association and amplification, and we start to get somewhere with it. We get into the meaning of the dream. We start relating the dream or the nightmare to the person who had it, their life and what's going on inside them, what's going on externally. That's not the case with night terrors. Night terrors seem to be an expression of the nervous system where it releases energy that has been stored within it by trauma. The trauma could have happened years ago. You have the fight or flight reaction, the adrenaline rush, and then you don't have a chance to release it after the experience. This has been shown through the studies of animals after, like, you have the, you know, the tiger hunts down a gazelle and the gazelle is now on the ground playing dead. The tiger has it by its throat. It's about to die. And then the tiger gets distracted by something. The gazelle goes running off. What's the first thing the gazelle does when it has the opportunity to, when the danger is over? You'll see it do this whole body shaking. And what that's doing is it's shaking it off. It's releasing the energy out of it. Well, if you experience trauma and you don't shake it off, it gets stored in your nervous system. And then when you're asleep, your defenses come down and your body relaxes enough so that it can release that energy. So now that becomes a night terror because you're experiencing terror, but it doesn't seem to be coming from, you know, just like the experience. The nightmare is more of a reflection of a terror that you're already feeling instead of the other way around. Most people say, oh, I had this terrible nightmare, you know, and then like I felt terror in response to what was happening in the nightmare. Night terrors seem to be the other way around. I had a friend of mine who experienced this, and I spoke with him at length about his nightmares, with what we called nightmares at the time. And he's like, man, this is different. He's like, I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm, you know, I'm sweating. My heart's going, you know, 200 beats a minute. I'm fully charged and ready to kill someone or, you know, like defend myself because it's as if I'm fighting for my life. And he's like, it happens night after night after night. We tried analyzing the content of what he reported to me, and I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. This is just blood, gore, violence without a story or a narrative behind it. And what he told me in the course of us talking about this is that he had experienced something as a teenager, young teenager, where his stepfather pointed a shotgun at him and said, prepare to die, kid. Like he said that the man was a violent alcoholic and that this kind of scene was fairly typical, but he said that that moment was, he really felt like he was going to die. So now he has that extreme fight or flight response that's, you know, to a matter of survival. And then afterwards, he doesn't have a chance to shake it off. Why? Because he's still living under the same roof with the man with the gun. So he absorbed that energy into his body, and he never had a chance to release it in a sort of therapeutic way. And that's what led to it. That happened a little later in his life. Now, when you're talking about children and night terrors that they experience, there can be different causes for it. It's hard when you're talking to a 3, 4, 5-year-old child to get into some kind of psychoanalytic, you know, stuff with them. Like, okay, kid, let's analyze the content of your night terror. You know, what are we going to trace it right, to? It's not the same process as we do with adults, you know? So it's different. And whether we can classify it as a nightmare or a night terror is hard to say. One of the things that we can say about nightmares is generally the difference is that with the nightmare, there is more meaningful content that can be related to current situations going on in a person's life. You know, if a child is in a stressful environment at home, if they are having trouble adapting to, you know, the ordinary world, they have, say, developmental delays, they talk a little later, or they have a caretaker who gives them, is either abusive or is like there's something going on at home that they can't wrap their mind around, but they just know that mommy and daddy are having trouble, you know, or hey, maybe mommy or daddy are not there. Maybe there's a lot of stuff going on in the house that makes it a chaotic environment. Maybe they're not getting fed on a regular schedule. Maybe they're not going to bed. Maybe someone's not changing their diapers. There are these things that children absorb that the adults around them will justify not giving the level of care that the child needs, but the child knows it. So that would really be the reasons why I think that a child like you were at that age started experiencing something that was so traumatic.
I don't know. And something, I do remember something very vividly that I dreamed that something like grabbed my hand, my arm. And that just seems so real to me. I woke up and I turned around and my sister was actually sitting on my bed, turned around and I actually hit her when that happened. I just, you know, swung in my, I didn't mean to, you know what I mean? But that experience just will never leave me. I mean, I felt like a hand just grabbed me or something. Then I woke up, you know what I mean? But, those are very vivid and real. And that's something that's a part of my life that I won't forget. I don't know why, but they were horrible. It was a horrible time for me growing up having, and again, thinking, reflecting on it and thinking about what you said, the difference is, I think it was just sheer crazy nightmares and not night terrors. 'Cause I didn't have anything traumatic tied to mine, but I do want to ask you about PTSD. And the reason why is, you know, I am a military veteran and I don't suffer from it, but I know friends that have suffered from it because they were put in different wartime situations. And luckily, you know, I was too, but I didn't see the things that they saw. So I'm wondering, for people that experience PTSD, are they experiencing night terrors? Is that what you're saying? Like,
they can.
I so see that being tied to night terrors for people that suffer PTSD.
Yeah, and if you're in combat and you experience situations of life and death, or just war itself, being in anywhere near a combat zone, there's a lot of traumas that can go on. On my podcast, The Dreams That Shape Us, we just interviewed a veteran who was in the Navy during Vietnam. And while he didn't see combat, he did experience things that gave him PTSD. We tend to think of PTSD as post-traumatic stress disorder, right? We think of it as something that has to have been really bad, like life or death, bloody combat, in order for a person to have it. But I think the most recent studies have shown that about 1 out of 3 people are walking around with symptoms of PTSD. Just going through the pandemic and the lockdown and all the fear and uncertainty that it created was traumatically stressful for people. And we don't have the same sorts of coping mechanisms that we used to have. Number one being that you could go out into nature, you know, there would be near your home and you could walk out into a forest, and now you're in the cool of the trees and the shade and you're hearing the birds and the animals and the water flowing and all that. And that itself was very therapeutic. So we're missing that. We're missing connections with each other that used to be stronger among families and among communities. And there are so many other additional stresses to modern life. So we are experiencing stress, and it is traumatizing. And there are a lot of people who have the symptoms. One of the first symptoms, nightmares. And so it has to be understood, though, that the nightmares are not deliberately traumatizing you or re-traumatizing you. What they're doing is trying to help you to process and reconsolidate your memories. When it takes you back into the traumatic memories, the purpose of it is to help you to pull all that stuff up, reconfigure it, and restore it in a way that is better. Like, it gets reprocessed so that you can go through a healing process.
Now you're talking about the first symptoms. I'm sorry for interrupting here, JM. But you're talking about the first sign or symptom of PTSD is nightmares.
It is. It's one of the primary symptoms of PTSD. Nightmares come with it. And oftentimes the nightmares they can come years later, or they can come the next, you know, the first night after a traumatic experience. But if they have kicked in later in life, then it's generally a sign that you're trying to heal. The way that your brain is doing this is by pulling up the memories of the trauma and then giving you an opportunity to work your way through it. Like, if you could look back, here's one thing that you get a lot of is survivor guilt. You know, you made it back from the war, but your buddy didn't, and you have the survival guilt about it. So you'll dream, have nightmares about seeing yourself back in the situation where your buddy died, or maybe not the exact same situation, but it's that same general scenario. You keep repeating the same pattern of feeling guilty about that. But if you can dream about it in a way and come to some kind of resolution while dreaming, it'll carry over into your waking life. Now you have reprocessed the experience and you've begun the healing process. But a lot of people aren't able to do that, and they need therapeutic help to guide them to that. And there are techniques like dream rescripting and stuff that are specifically for helping to reprocess nightmares so that the healing process can begin, as opposed to just re-experiencing the trauma night after night, which, having talked to a lot of people who have PTSD, that's what they say is that it gets to a point where it's really disrupting their daily life, and they feel like they're being you know, tortured because all they want is a good night of sleep. And then when they do fall asleep, what they have is a night full of nightmares. And it's not the first thing they have to know about it is that it's not antagonizing them. It's trying to help them to heal something. And in the long run, if they don't heal it, it's going to get more and more chronic. So the nightmares, the unconscious mind that's producing the nightmares is a natural healer. And it knows that if you don't deal with it now, it's only going to get worse. So it may look at it and say, yeah, I know you're busy with work and you have stress in your home life, or that this just says that to you, it doesn't seem like a good time to be going through this.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the Kia Summer Sticker Sales Event, so give your friends something to look at, like a B&B with an ocean view, an endless field of wildflowers, or a sunset that needs no filter. Make this a summer to share and save with a capable Kia SUV or powerful sedan. See your local Kia dealer or visit Kia.com to learn more. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-334-KIA for details. Always drive safely. Sale applies to purchase of specially tagged 2024 vehicles only. Quantities are limited. Must take delivery by 7/8/24.
But the unconscious mind looks at it and says, we need to do this now because it's only going to get worse. And that's one of the things I find often with people who ask me about nightmares is they will start talking about it, and I'll get into their coping mechanisms and stuff. And they'll say, well, my main coping mechanism is to ignore it. And I go, so you think that's going to make it better? You know, you've got this, you know, 5-alarm, you know, siren going off in your head, basic, you know, these nightmares that are saying there is something wrong and we need to do something about it. And your way of dealing with it is to ignore it. And that's one of the things that we establish up front when we talk with people about their nightmares. This is that ignoring it. That
it doesn't work.
It's not going to make them go away.
That's, you know what, the consciousness is just fascinating. It's so complicated and fascinating, and I really love to learn more about it. I do believe there's a ton that we still don't understand about consciousness, which is the reason why I'm going to divert a little bit, because I'm curious in your field. Have you ever looked at, and this is, I've had guests on the show that really say that they have experienced this, but have you ever had someone tell you that they've had some type of nightmare and then it led into, well, they were exploring nightmares with you, but then they said something about having some type of out of body experience?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Dreams or nightmares. I mean, probably more generally dreams.
Yeah. But do you believe that happens to people, that they are truly experiencing some type of, okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah. Now, I know it does. For one, there's one of my main sources of information about metaphysical things, including with dreams, is Edgar Cayce. He was a psychic who was very famous back in the day. And he would go into a state of hypnosis, basically in trance. And just as he was falling down into the deep part of that, people could make a suggestion to him and say, you know, Edgar, we would like to ask you some questions. And he would then, this other sort of voice would speak through him. And he did this like 15,000 times in his life. And he came up with astoundingly accurate information. One of the things that he said about dreams, and this is what started me off on this path, because I got it from a source that I trusted. He said that our mind leaves the body, our spirit actually journeys out of the body while we're asleep, and it happens every night. Now, it doesn't mean every dream is an out-of-body experience, although technically, if you think about it, what's happening when you're falling asleep is that you're disconnecting your mind from the senses of the body. So in a way, every dream is an out-of-body experience because it's an experience you have while not connected to the physical, to the senses of the body in the usual sort of way. So there is that. But what Edgar meant it was in more of the metaphysical way, when we talk about what or not out-of-body experience is, it's the projection of consciousness so that it is no longer tied to the current time and space. You're asleep in your bed. You're laying there, knocked out, you know? But your mind can be anywhere in the universe, you know? So Edgar Cayce was the first source to tell me about that I really trusted, and it opened my mind to it. And then I ran across a man named Bob Monroe, and he was he's the author of the book Journeys Out of the Body. And he also founded the Monroe Institute. Now at Monroe, he tried to combine metaphysics with regular physics in the sense of he was scientific about the way that he went about things. And one of the things that he did is he built a state-of-the-art sleep lab, and he tested on himself when he would go out of body while dreaming. He would be able to tell by the EEG readouts. He could say, right here is where it happened. I know, like, he correlated it with the readout. Well, what they showed is that he was in the delta stage of sleep. Delta stage is when you are in the deepest sleep that has the slowest brainwave patterns. For most people, you might call it dead asleep. You are knocked out unconscious. And for most people, they can't remember anything happening during that stage of sleep. Bob says that it's when we journey out of the body. So I tend to think of it less in terms of leaving the body and more in terms of what we call remote viewing, which was a protocol that was developed for the psychic spying programs that were officially run for over 20 years by CIA and other intelligence agencies. The US was doing it, but we were following in the footsteps of the Russians because we found out they were doing it, and we couldn't let them, you know, have the toys that, you know, and have all the fun. So we developed these programs, and we found out that it was real, that people in their own mind could go to remote places and see events, objects, people, and they can do it all clairvoyantly in their mind. Now, you're awake, you're not under hypnosis, and you're not dreaming, but you're still able to access information as if your mind is in the other place. But your mind isn't leaving. Your mind is pulling that other place and rendering it in the environment, like it's recreating the environment inside of your own mind. So, for example, one famous remote viewer was able to view a place that was in Russia where they knew the intelligence services knew that there was some kind of secret stuff going on. And they asked him to take a look around, like in his mind, take a look around one of the most secret places on Earth, way out in like Siberia.
Are you talking about Yuri Gagarin?
He got in. No, well, Uri was studied by them. No, this was Joe McMonagle.
Yeah, McMonagle. Yeah, he was. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was great. Go ahead.
He was fantastic. He was psychic spy number 001, you know, 001. That was Joe McMonagle. Well, he saw inside this building where they were building, he's like, there's a submarine, but it's different than anything. Like it's the deck is bigger. It's got 18 to 20 missile tubes, and they're building it in two halves and welding it together. Now, this is inside of a super secret facility. He sees all of this. And the people who reviewed it said, well, that's not how you build submarines. You don't build them in two halves and weld them together. And nothing of that size has ever been built. Well, guess what got launched soon after that was the Russian Typhoon class submarine that was built as two halves that were welded together. It had 20 missile tubes, and it was the largest submarine ever built. Now, the thing that also really kicked it was that he was being interrogated in a way, interviewed by a Navy admiral who got the intelligence reports of what McGonagall reported. And he's like, there's some problems here. I need to talk with you about this. Discrepancies, let's call it. Joe said he had the spontaneous experience when they said, well, if it's in this building and it's a submarine, it's 100 yards from the nearest access to water. And Joe said, in 4 months, they're going to blast a channel from that building and they're going to launch the sub. 4 months later, that's exactly what happened. So this is one of the spectacular successes. And I use it as an example of you're seeing something in your mind, but you're not going to the location. The same as a journey out of body or out of body experience doesn't necessarily mean that you're leaving your body. You're still having the experience within your own mind. But there's something very mysterious about the way that you can remotely view locations as if you are physically there. That's where things get very interesting.
You're exactly right. And man, the remote viewing program is just amazing and fascinating. I love hearing anything about that. Let me just ask you this real quick. Do you know the name of that sub? Did it ever come to light?
It was the Typhoon class sub. It was the first one that was launched.
It was. Okay.
The Russians eventually built a fleet of them, and they were game changers. And it was in the early 1980s when they put those things out in the water with 20 ICBMs each, and they could, you know, float them all over the world. Deep under the water, there was, you know, nuclear submarines that could stay under the water for months at a time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really, you know, it changed the dynamics of the Cold War.
Built in two halves. That's not typical, yeah. You know.
Split down the middle, and then they welded them together. There were other hits in the remote viewing program that were similar. What I've been trying to do, I did learn the remote viewing protocols, and I can't say that I was any good at it, but I learned it. And one of the things that I'd like to do is remote view a dream. This has been my own area of research, because a dream is an energetic space that conventional theory views dreams as these activities of the brain. They can look inside the brain and be like, well, there's all this activity in the brainstem, and then those electrical impulses rise up through the various layers of the brain, eventually reaching the cortex, where higher functioning starts to come into play, you know, and we can look at all this activity going on in the brain and try to explain what's going on. Well, when I look at a dream, I tend to think of it first as an experience that you have rather than just, you know, electrical firings of the brain. And two, that you create some kind of a space to have the experience in. Now, this, what I mean by a space is that it's like a psychic, as in of the psyche, of the mind, a psychic space that you actually create while you're dreaming. And it's a space that other people can share with you. I know this because I've researched shared dreams, and I have found personally cases where either the people were lying their asses off to me, or they really did experience shared dreams with other people. I've got one case where 5 members of the same family all had the same dream on the same night in the same place with such improbable imagery that there was no way that they were dreaming about these things by random, you know, like it was a fluke, just a coincidence, that all 5 members of the same family dreamed that they went to Central Park in New York. They lived in New Jersey. They went to Central Park. There was a skyscraper tall stone structure that was hollow in the middle. Technicians hooked up all these cables and wires and stuff to it and turned it on, and it turned into a Stargate. They started walking through. People from other side came through, and people in New York went through. The family did it together. They ended up in Tokyo in Ebisu Gardens. It's a famous place in Tokyo. So now they've gone from Central Park to Tokyo. And there were 4 members of the family. They met the 5th member there, who was in Tokyo at the time, physically there. It was their dad, and he was on a business trip. Their dad is sitting on a bench and sees them come through the Stargate. or teleportation gate, whatever you want to call it. And so he sees them, they see him, and they join together and they go touring around Tokyo. He said, now he's on a different time, you know, very different from New Jersey to Tokyo, right? There's 10 hours difference or something. He's on a very different sleep schedule than they are. The four members of the family all had this dream that night. Dad was awake. Dad then goes to sleep and has the dream where he is in Ubisu Gardens. There's this big stone structure. Technicians hook up all these cables and wires to it, plug it in, turn it on. It turns into a stargate. People start walking through, going from Tokyo to New York, and then from New York to Tokyo. He's watching what's going on, and he sees his family, the four members of the family who all had that dream, come through and join him, and they went walking off and explored Tokyo. So you have five members of the family who all have the same dream from their own perspectives with very unlikely imagery and themes. It's just impossible that it's a coincidence.
How do you think that's possible? How in the world would that be possible? Do you think there's something else that works? Say again?
I think it boils down to the mathematics of hyperspace. See, this isn't very well known, but there is a mathematically precise theory that says that space as we know it is consistent of eight dimensions. Now, we know four dimensions, three dimensions of space and one dimension of time. Time is basically an object's path through space. So we measure it in terms of time, but time is actually the path of an object, a three-dimensional object traveling through space. When we look at Einstein's relativity, we look at it, and this is what he spelled out. Now, there are four other dimensions beyond the physical dimensions that we know of that are in eight-dimensional hyperspace. And I think that some of these experiences that we have of consciousness that are outside of the usual, including shared dreams, are taking place in hyper-dimensional spaces. I think it's also how we do a lot of things like out-of-body experience and other psychic and paranormal experiences. I think encountering things like spirits and ghosts those encounters are actually taking place in a hyperspace dimension, that there's a bleed over from our dimension to these other hidden dimensions. I only say hidden because we don't have the senses to be able to see that they're there. But if you look at the physical senses, so what, like just sight itself, sight is a very small range of light frequency, of the spectrum of light. We're able to see, if I remember correctly, I'm just going to say 2-4% of what's actually there. That's why we have things like infrared cameras. You can have something detected on infrared and it's standing right next to you and you can't see it. So there's a lot to our world that we don't have the senses to be able to perceive. And I think that some of these things that we explain as paranormal or like in a dream state where you have a shared dream or an out-of-body experience, a visitation from a deceased loved one, a very common type of dream.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I think that these things are happening because of the physics of hyperspace. I think that's what enabled it.
I agree with you. And I'm going to jump over to your book because it's got some really good sections in here. It's a great book. The book is Nightmares, Your Guide to Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. And on page 40, I think it's 43, I have it marked, you talk about haunted dolls. Is that a common, I mean, I've dreamed about a lot of things in my life, but never a haunted doll or a doll. So are dolls common in nightmares?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I won't say it's the most common theme you ever run across, you know? Yeah. No, great one. A lot of people ask about the other things in the book, and I think you might be the first interviewer to ask about haunted dolls. Now, my book is built like an encyclopedia of themes and symbols and nightmares. So I have it classified under general, very large themes like, you know, violence and murder. So then I have things like, you know, serial killers and, you know, execution and things like that. Like these are sub themes. And then I write these entries that are like encyclopedia entries, very detailed and at length, but also I try to make it fun to read. So anyway, haunted dolls made its way in because since 2009, I have been a primary member and I'm now a moderator of the largest online community for dream sharing, the largest one in the world. So for the last 14 years, I have been immersed in what people dream about. And haunted dolls come up more frequently than what you might think is commonly known. Like, you know, you've never had a dream about a haunted doll. I can't say I've had one either, but I've run across enough people who've had these nightmares that I go, yeah, this needs to be an entry in my book, because enough people dream about it that there are going to be enough readers who pick up the book because they want the answer to why they're dreaming about a haunted doll. And you know, we also pick up these things from our media, you know, like the Chucky movies. It's a haunted doll, you know. And I give examples in the book of people who've had these dreams and how we walk through them to get to the answers about them. Like the one guy who had the dream where he was outside of his ex-girlfriend's house. Now, in real life, when she broke up with him and left, she left without a trace. And it was a bad breakup. So he didn't have a chance to like work through any of the trauma of that. And he came to realize later that he'd acted like a real asshat. And he wanted to apologize to her, but she was gone. In his dream, he finds out where she lives and like goes up and knocks and no one answers. So he's like, oh, the door's not locked. I'm going to walk in. He goes into the living room. And there's this doll sitting there and it's looking at him. And he's like, well, that's weird. But he decides oddly that he's going to go to sleep on her couch. He's like, well, I'll wait for her to get home. And he goes to sleep on the couch in the dream. And he wakes up and the doll is gone. And there's a note sitting there. And there's one word written on it. You know, scrawling red letters with the big exclamation point, you. And it's saying, you know what you did. And he goes like screaming out of there, like leaves the place in terror. Now, the doll doesn't really do anything in the dream, but it plays a very important role. It's a way of saying that there's something inside of him that feels really haunted by the situation that happened with her. But he can't deal with her directly to work through it. You know, like a doll can be like, it can be like a substitute, you know, it substitutes for the person.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In that case, it really is kind of substituting for him. I've also found that there are people who are treated like doll as children. Their parents dress them up and make them perform and do things. And they really kind of feel like a puppet. You know, there's a hand inside of them that's animating everything that they do. Then they get into life, you know, later into life, and they still feel like a puppet. And what they'll dream about is some kind of a haunted doll, an animated doll that's really a symbol for the feeling that they're somebody else's puppet.
You know what? That's really interesting. It's the first time I've ever heard of anybody anyone actually dreaming about haunted dolls, but which is creep dolls creep me out anyway. I don't like dolls, but I wanted to ask you.
I also mentioned clowns, by the way.
Clowns.
Yeah.
Is that common? Is clowns common?
evil clown. Yeah. That is an entry in my book, The Nightmares, How to, you know, Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. And it was one of the things that I included because enough people dream about it. Mm-hmm. And we have like Pennywise the Clown is the modern manifestation of this Stephen King book. But there are people who have these evil clown, you know, and there's oftentimes with clowns, what you're getting with the reason why people fear it is because they know that there's something behind the mask, but they can't put their finger on what it is. And then it allows their imagination to kind of fill in some cases, they fill in with the worst possible, you know, well, that it's a clown, but it's John Wayne Gacy, which if anybody knows Gacy, he was a serial killer who used to work as a clown, you know, or it's Pennywise, you know? So yeah, I had a lot of fun being able to bring that stuff into it. I mean, I do talk about a lot of the common themes, you know, murder and war.
What about black-eyed people? You have that.
Yeah, one of the most common. Yeah. Shadow people and black-eyed people are fairly common in nightmares. Now, this is what if I had to make, say, a top 20 list of themes and nightmares, I would put black-eyed people, you know, at least as symbols or characters that appear in nightmares. And there's a sense of with that people are not able to see into something. It's unknown to them. They can't penetrate the mystery. And that's why the dream uses black eyes as the symbol for it. There's an idea expressed in it symbolically. You have to learn the language of symbolism. This is one of the first steps with dream interpretation. Every dream interpreter needs to first learn the language of symbolism because it is the language that dreams communicate in. A symbol is a shorthand way of expressing an idea. A dream then uses, for example, a black eyes, totally black. What does it mean? Well, you begin with eyes as things that you see with. If eyes are black, there's nothing there to see. So what it can mean is that there's something that you are not seeing. You're not seeing it, not in the physical. It's not in the physical sense. It means it in the figurative sense. If you say, I don't understand the problem, you're not seeing. I don't see what the problem is. You're not seeing it. It doesn't mean physically. It means mentally. So black eyes can also, along the same lines, can imply that there's a lack of connection there. We often connect with people through their eyes. You know, the eyes are the windows of the soul, they say. You know, the eyes are very expressive of what the inner life of a person is like. You know, if you say that someone has dead eyes, it means that they're looking at you like a snake. You know, there's nothing human there that you can connect with. Well, you have the same thing with black eyes. There's nothing human there to connect with. And it can express an idea in people that they're not able to connect with themselves and with the world, that they're just kind of going through life kind of, you know, meaninglessly and lacking connection. So those are some of the ideas. And it does come up enough that I felt like it was necessary to write about it in my book.
I have to, that's really interesting. And, they really believe, I've conducted interviews. People have reported that that is a real, some type of crazy phenomena that they're experiencing, seeing these people out in public with these black eyes. I don't know what's happening there, but it's frightening if that is happening. Let me ask you something about, the sleep paralysis, because from what I understand, it's where people are suffering some type of nightmare that is projected outwardly and they're seeing this play out with their physical eyes. I don't know if that's a real thing or not, so I wanted to ask you about that.
Oh, yeah, it is. Now, here's the first thing to know about sleep paralysis is that it is a normal state of affairs as you're sleeping. Your body secretes acetylcholine, which is a hormone that mutes your nervous system. specifically your arms and your legs, so that you won't act out your dream and hurt yourself or the person sleeping in the same bed as you. It's sometimes your nervous system can dream about something and override sleep paralysis, in which case you have things like sleepwalking. But usually it does its job. It keeps you under and keeps your body still so that you can have these very vivid experiences in your mind. But what happens sometimes is that people will wake up while their body is still, you know, under the influence of the sleep hormone, and they are sleep paralyzed. In the medical literature, it's called REM atonia. Atonia means muscle slackness, and REM is rapid eye movement. So while you're dreaming, your muscles are supposed to be slack, but we know that's not always the case. And you can wake up, and what you experience is an overlay of dream reality with physical reality. Your eyes open, or you just become aware that you're awake and you're still dreaming, but it's creates a hallucinatory experience, and it's so incredibly vivid and real, you would swear that it's real, but it's actually sleep paralysis. It's basically a hallucination. Now, sleep paralysis has been studied pretty extensively, and we are thinking now that it could be responsible for a lot of things that people used to attribute to paranormal experience. Now, back in the day, you had supposed demons that would visit you. Demons and devils would visit you in your sleep. And people would wake up and they'd be like, yeah, it was sitting right there on my chest and I couldn't move. I mean, as soon as someone says, I woke up and I couldn't move and I saw something in the room, my mind goes to, that was a sleep paralysis hallucination. It's also called a hypnopompic hallucination. Now in modern day, instead of witches and demons and things like that, what we tend to have are people who dream about aliens being in their room. And the theory is that the things that we fear tend to reflect things that are coming up culturally. And so back in the day, hundreds of years ago, we had witches, demons, devils. Now we have aliens. It's the same sort of wild, crazy looking thing that is more powerful than us, can pop into our room at any time, and is something that's beyond our control and comprehension. A lot of, when you look into the history of alien abduction, you find that a lot of the reports begin the same way. I was asleep in my bedroom, and then I woke up and I couldn't move. And that's when I saw the little gray guys, or whatever kind of alien that they're seeing. They'll have experiences where they say that they floated out of their bedroom. Gee, does that sound like an out-of-body experience? You know? Now, I'm not going to say that this is a reason to think that all reports of alien abduction are hallucinatory, but I will say that we have a very suggestive physiological cause for this. It's sleep paralysis. And I think it's something that's important to know. It leads us into something that I found to be very interesting. And this came originally from Dr. Carl Jung. He's a Swiss psychiatrist, and I get a lot of what I know about dreams from him and people who followed after him based on his teachings. He said that the dreaming function runs in the background of the mind at all times. It doesn't turn off when we wake up. It goes into the background. When you're asleep, it comes into the foreground. So your senses, you go to sleep and your senses shut down. Your mind's connection to the senses shut down. And now this background process comes forward. But you're dreaming all the time in a way, because the function of dreaming is running. It's just that it's getting crowded out by sensory experiences when you're awake and normal, you know, normal thought processes. So what it tells us is that dreaming is it's a normal function of the mind, and that you can have experiences while you're awake that are very dreamlike. And that's what can lead into things that we call paranormal or psychic. In fact, in the study of, in the research of psychic functioning, has concluded that dreaming plays an intrinsic role with it. I'm writing a book right now for Skyhorse called The Science of the Paranormal. And as I got into the research into this subject, I found that there were a lot of correlations with dreaming. The state of mind that people can go into when they have psychic functioning, like, say, clairvoyance, that is very similar to a dream. And in fact, Joe McMonagle, the remote viewer, said that what we're dealing with is a phenomenon that is very imaginative. And you can't distinguish it from when you have things that you view in your mind with using the remote viewing protocol or clairvoyance or ESP. You're not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to distinguish it from imagination. Well, here's the thing about dreams. Guess what parts of the mind they use to create an experience of dreaming? They use your imagination. The imagination is not one place in the brain. It is all places in the brain, basically, that act in coordination. Maybe not all, but almost your entire brain at one point or another can be used in the production of a dream. When we look at the way that that works by watching people dream while they're in an fMRI, we find that the same patterns of firing in the same places in the brain while dreaming also happen while imagining very deeply. So we think that a lot of these things that are so-called psychic functioning are actually produced or facilitated through the same parts of the mind that cause us to dream. So the relationship between dreaming and psychic functioning is they go hand in hand with each other. Just maybe you might call them two different experiences that you have resulting from the same basic functioning of the mind. Pretty cool, huh?
Yes, absolutely. And truly, truly, it's just fascinating. I mean, all of it. And I would like to know before we go, I mean, this is something that you do for your clients. You work with them one-on-one. Do they have to be in person, or can you do it by Zoom or something like that? Or how do you do that exactly?
Yeah. We can do it remotely. I usually use Google Meet, but just because I find it's more integrated with my, you know, I can get notifications on my phone and I don't have to install special software or anything like that. But yeah, jm@jmdebord, DEBORD, .com. If anybody is interested in contacting me about working with their dreams, I am going to start offering more services related to nightmares since that came up. And it's what my book is about. But I'm also building an online school. I've had it up for years, but I'm going to expand it come October. I'm going to have an expanded version. It's at dreamschool.net, and it's going to offer all kinds of training and knowledge related to dreams. But I do find that if you really want to go deep with this, that you need one-on-one and small group training. Dream interpretation is an art that goes back thousands of years, and the science of it is maybe 100 years old. You need both of them in these days, this day and age. You really do need to have a background in both of them, and then you can go off into exploration of your own dreams and find what they're really saying to you. It can be incredibly beneficial. If you listen to my podcast, The Dreams That Shape Us, and take any of the episodes, because we explore the life-shaping power of dreams, and we bring these guests on and go into depth about their dream life and the ways that their dreams have given them experiences that changed their lives. and everything from healing to psychic experiences to being able to make some of the biggest decisions of their lives to finding out things that have been totally hidden and unknown to them. And it becomes, the information is brought to them through their dreams. And it goes on and on. But if you, anybody out there who is unsure about, well, I don't know how meaningful dreams are, and I don't know if it's really worth the time for me to do it, go listen to an episode or two of my podcast, and you'll very quickly find out that it is well worth doing. In fact, I would say it's the best thing that you can do for self-help of all the methods and various therapies and processes and methodologies and stuff. I'm not going to write any of them off. I'm going to say, if you want the most bang for your buck, just pay attention to your dreams. You can, 15 minutes a day of writing down your dreams and giving them some thought can be the best 15 minutes a day that you spend on your own improvement.
I agree. I think dream interpretation is very important, especially for suffering from nightmares, and you have been for years, repetitive nightmares. What's the longest you ever heard of someone suffering from a repetitive nightmare? Just real quick.
Maybe one of the same kind. Yes. I would say I've heard of cases that go as long as a decade.
Wow.
The thing though is that what a dream is trying to do is get across a message to you. And if one type of experience doesn't work where it says, okay, I'm going to tell the story to you this way, and it does it night after night after night, and you don't get the message, it'll craft a new story. In fact, oftentimes when you have multiple dreams in one night, you're actually dreaming about the same subject. And this is where you realize how clever the dreaming mind is, you go, wow, it told me the same story 5 different ways. And very different. They appear totally disconnected, but they're actually addressing the same thing about me in my life. Same story, 5 different ways. So I could say 10 years, but the thing is that it may not be the exact same repetitive dream unless it's going back into an event that happened in your life. You were almost murdered or sexually assaulted. You were, something happened to you that was really traumatizing. You were in combat. Then you can have this same basic dream over and over again.
Yeah, I do believe it's very, very important if you're suffering from nightmares to know what that's all about so that you can move past, whatever those deeper issues are. The name of your website, what's your website address again?
JMDeBord.com. DeBord. So JMDeBord.com.
All right, very good. The book is called Nightmares, Your Guide to Interpreting Your Darkest Dreams. J.M. DeBorg, my special guest. J.M., many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
And to you. Thank you. I appreciate you, too.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of 4, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.